The Council of Chalcedon, which met in 451, 20 years after the Council of Ephesus, attempted to address an excess of the opposite kind from the kind that had been addressed at Ephesus. At Ephesus, the problem had been Nestorius, an unwise and imprudent proponent of an excessively Antiochene theology who overemphasized the distinction between the natures in Christ. This time, in the Council of Chalcedon, the problem was an excessively zealous and imprudent representative of the Alexandrian school, Eutyches, who was the archimandrite, or spiritual superior, of a monastery in Constantinople, who was so opposed to Nestorianism that he declared that the incarnate Christ had only one nature, not two natures after the incarnation. And he also refused to acknowledge what the Council of Ephesus had stated, that Christ's humanity is consubstantial, homoousion, with us. Eutyches had a great supporter, not surprisingly, in the Archbishop of Alexandria, Dioscorus. And 2 years before the Council of Chalcedon, his supporter Dioscorus had hastened to the site of the former council, to the site of Ephesus, to attend a council which he stage managed in order to vindicate Eutyches, whose theology he, as an Alexandrian, wished to support. This, what was later called the Robber Council of Ephesus, was protested against by the papal legates who attended it, but it was supported by the Emperor Theodosius II and would probably have continued to be supported for quite some time, except for Theodosius' death 2 years later. On his death, the new emperor, Marcian, was induced to call another council to look more cautiously and carefully at the issues which Dioscorus of Alexandria had tried to push so forcibly and which had rehabilitated Eutyches. This was the Council of Chalcedon. The principal theological instrument that was used, which Dioscorus had not allowed to be introduced at the earlier Council of Ephesus, was a letter written by Pope Leo the Great, the so-called Tome of Leo, who excused himself from being physically present because the ravages of Italy induced by Attila the Hun required his personal attention. But Pope Leo had legates, and the tome or letter of Leo was regarded as one of the decisive keys to the definition of the council. And the council was a very clear articulation of what had been left slightly ambiguous in Cyril of Alexandria's formulation. This Council of Chalcedon will proclaim, as we'll see, very clearly that Christ, that is to say the incarnate Christ, Christ after the incarnation, has two natures, a divine and a human physis, or nature, in one person. And the term for person is both hypostasis, that describes a subsistent reality, and prosopon, or person. And the Council goes on to say that the union of the divine and the human in Christ, the union of these natures in one hypostasis, in one prosopon, is without confusion, without change, without division, and without separation. Each of these is a Greek word that begins with the alpha privative, the letter alpha that indicates a denial. No confusion, no change, no division, no separation. And this will be the contribution of the Council of Chalcedon, these adjectives and the notion of the clear articulation of two natures in Christ in one person, or hypostasis, or prosopon. So let's look at the texts themselves. First, the letter or tome of Leo. We won't look at this in a very great detail. I've highlighted one or two texts, and if we could drop down to the first highlighted text, we'll see. And remember, Leo was writing in Latin, which is not completely satisfying to the Greek mind, which has multiple terms that are somewhat difficult to render into Latin. But Leo writes that the proper character of both natures in Christ, utriusque naturae, was maintained and came together in a single person, in unum personam. If we drop down on a little bit further to the next highlighted text, He acknowledges that one does need to speak about, as he puts it, the activity of each form that is proper to it, namely the humanity or the divinity, is in communion with the other. The Word, that is, God, performs what is proper to the Word, and the flesh accomplishes what belongs to the flesh. But one does this, and one acknowledges Christ as both divine and as both human, as experiencing human realities and acting as God. One does this without calling into question the unity, the one person of Christ. If we then drop down still further in the text to the next highlighted text, we come to the definition of faith of the Council. And a great deal of this consists in a restatement of what had gone before. And this becomes characteristic of the ecumenical councils, a reiteration of what had gone before, a reiteration of the professions of faith, of the creeds that had formerly been established. And so we find that there is a restatement, if you drop down to of the Nicene Creed, then a restatement of the Niceno-Constantinopolitan Creed, the creed that is it is modified at Constantinople, and then a restatement of what had already been stated at Ephesus, that the Blessed Virgin Mary is Theotokos, and so forth. And if we drop down then to the section of highlighted text with a couple of light-colored bars before it, we come again to this phrase, which was to be found at Ephesus, but which Eutyches so vigorously objected to, that Christ is consubstantial, homoousion, to the Father in regard to divinity, and consubstantial, homoousios, or homoousion in the accusative, with us as regards his humanity. Christ is consubstantial with us in his humanity. And for those emphasizing the unity, or trying to define a unity of natures and emphasizing divinity at the same time, the idea of Christ consubstantial with us in humanity is repugnant. However, the statement goes on to define that Christ is in two natures and duo phusesin, which are unconfused, asunkutos, unchanged, atreptos, undivided, adiaretos, unseparated, acharistos. So these adjectives, unconfused, unchanged, undivided, unseparated, the two natures are united, but all of these characteristics are made clear that there is neither confusion nor separation between them. And then in addition to defining the two natures in Christ, to making that very clear, these two natures, both natures, are preserved and come together in a single person, prosopon, and in a single, and here the translation is subsistent being, in a single hypostasis. So that really represents the great contribution of Constantinople to make clear what had been left slightly ambiguous in Cyril's formulation at Ephesus, that Christ is in two natures, but a single hypostasis, a single, if you will, subsistent being, as it's translated here, and a single person. One other point worthy of note and of interest among the canons is, if you drop all the way down to number 28, is a controversial canon which was in fact rejected by Rome, which is an attempt to continue elevating the dignity of the See of Constantinople, to raise it up to a dignity equal to that of Rome, although giving Rome precedence of honor, stating that, after all, Constantinople is New Rome. It contains the Senate. It contains the seat of power. Therefore, it should definitely be not just an imperial see, but it should be raised to the dignity of being a metropolitan see. Rome objected to this and continues to object to the elevation of status of Constantinople, both earlier than this council and in subsequent councils as well.